Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, May 7th, 2018, and this is episode 142 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me this afternoon is Eric from Georgia once again with his puppies. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. The Giants came to my home state. They took care of business. I got to listen to Brave announcers all weekend be like, how are the Giants doing this? Who are these guys that are doing this? Who knew the Giants were a good team? So I'm riding the high of the Giants winning streak. It's nice. This is the first time I've lived in Georgia, and I've gotten to wear my Giants stuff proudly because everybody around here is Braves fans. It's like back in Chicago it used to be, but now I get to have a little thing, especially after the sweep with how the Braves have been rolling. So it's been good. What a good weekend, huh?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, Eric and I agreed that we should record today to kind of, you know, talk about some fun stuff and reset back on our Monday kind of regularly scheduled recording time. But yeah, they went into Atlanta, and you know, this young hot team that everyone was afraid of, with Acuna and others, and they pretty much demolished the Braves. They swept them. They crushed them. Scored all sorts of runs. They hit like 357 over the weekend. They had good pitching. They had timely hits. The two out hits were insane. The runners in scoring position, batting average, insane. 417 for the. Oh my god!
Yes.
Isn't that incredible?
It is. And you're right. 357. Yep.
God,
that's crazy.
Just incredible. So they actually hit better with runners in scoring position than just their overall average, which is probably an outlier, but we'll take it.
Right.
We'll take it.
There were runners on base all weekend long. Like, it was impressive, and we're going to run through numbers, but it was impressive just to watch the games. And again, the Braves announcers were fawning over this, the fact that the Giants just drag out at bats, and they're patient and patient and patient, and they look for their pitch. They did it on Friday against Fulton Avich. Saturday, they beat the crap out of McCarthy. That was easy. And then Sunday, they did it against the kid, Soroka. And they were patient. They worked up his pitch count early, and it's become like a staple of the Giants. They get guys on, they cause all sorts of havoc, and things happen now.
It was Andrew McCarthy. He's freaking hilarious. By the way, if you don't follow Andrew, sorry, Andrew, that was another guy I know. Brandon McCarthy on Twitter, please do so. He's been so funny. I mean, even when he was on the Dodgers, it's all right, whatever, but. He comes up with the funniest shit on Twitter, and sure enough, this weekend was fantastic. Now, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, should Bruce Bochy have joined Twitter? And of course, we said, probably not. Probably wasn't the best move, but so far, his tweets have been, informative and slightly funny. So, apparently, Bruce Bochy had problems parking when he was coming into the game on Saturday. So, Bruce Bochy tweeted out, I wasn't allowed to park in my spot in the media lot today, so I had to go to the Braves parking lot. But I'll park wherever they want me to if I get 11 runs. It's funny, it's from a manager saying that. Okay, great. Well, Brandon McCarthy, of course, who was shelled, I think, 8 earned runs and 3 1/3 or something like that? Lots of hits, 12 or 13 hits. So he replied later that evening, I gave up all those hits and runs out of respect for you after hearing about the parking snafu. I love it. And then, of course, his wife responded after that and said, Brandon, that's not how you do baseball.
Well, I saw a Giants fan.
I love these people. They're fantastic.
Yeah, a Giants fan underneath him said, oh, Brandon, us Giants fans will always love you. And his response to that was, of course you do. The Giants have owned me throughout the years.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, he's just on point. That's a guy who gets it. He's not taking it too seriously.
He totally gets it. He totally gets it. It didn't ruffle his feathers. You could tell that anyway. Just his personality and the way he he kind of carries himself. You know, he had a bad day. It's fine. He shakes it off with some humor. It was great. Apparently, Bochy laughed when he was told of the replies to him, and he also used Uber to get to the ballpark on Sunday. So, no parking snafus on Sunday.
Bruce Bochy, modern manager.
Yeah, and they did. Yeah, no, here he is tweeting and using Uber. What the hell? It's great. Oh, I love Bochy. He cracks me up. So anyway, yeah. So they destroyed McCarthy. Fortunately for the Giants, unfortunately for him, but just tons of runs. They had a season high 11 that game. They scored 33 over the last four games total. They had what, three games in a row where they had scored nine or more runs.
Nine and 11.
Yeah, and of course yesterday they only scored four, which was just enough. You know, Hunter Strickland came in with a three-run lead, and he was a little shaky, to say the least. He did allow two runs with the tying run stranded at third when the final batter popped out foul to, I think, Longoria. Was it third at the time, or was it Pablo?
I think so.
I think Longoria was a late insert. Anyway, so they won that game 4-3. So,
well, it's funny. Overall. Yeah, over the weekend, going into it, I wrote on Friday, we talked about it. The Giants were 13-3 in games they score first, and 3-12 in games which the opponent scores first. The Braves scored in the first inning of the first night. The Giants beat the crap out of them. The Braves scored first the second night. Giants beat the crap out of them. Braves pushed across a run to score first on Sunday. Giants still managed to string something together. It was like a completely different approach than we've seen, because, you know, we talked about the other day how they're getting ahead and then keeping teams down, and they did that in the first couple games and even the last game, but the Braves, you know, allowed it to happen by scoring first the first few times. I mean, it shows a good team like the Giants that they don't care if there's a run or two scored against them early on. They know they're going to get theirs. I mean, they did all weekend. The starters kept the Braves in check too. I mean, six earned runs over 27 innings. Andrew Suarez, how about that kid?
He looks great. He looks great. In fact, I just picked him up on my fantasy team to replace some injured. Actually, the injured Clayton Kershaw, believe it or not. He is on my team. Yeah, it really odd how the Braves did score first in all three games, and yet the Giants were victorious in all three. So that definitely inflated that stat. And I also believe the Giants are now 14-3, if my memory is correct, in games they score four runs or more. Which is great, because, you know, four runs is good. It's not
17-3.
Is it 17-3? Okay, thanks.
17-3. Yeah, wow. No problem. Yeah. It happened. The game notes open for today already.
No, they led. The Braves scored. They led 2-0 in the first game, and then 1-0 in each of the subsequent games after the first inning before the Giants would come back and retake the lead. So, great weekend overall. They raised their. You know, he said they hit 417 over the weekend. They raised their season average with runners in scoring position to 244. Kind of a respectable, you know, 18th in the major leagues now. They're kind of getting closer to the middle of the pack. But considering where they started, where they were almost dead last for the first month of the season, it's been just this huge surge over the last week, I would say. I think they've raised their team batting average a good 40 points with runners in scoring position in the last week and a half, so... It's great to see these guys actually, again, we talked about this, they put the runners on, they just had trouble getting them in, and now it's fun. It's almost like this whole weekend was a video game. It was just, or that old Bugs Bunny cartoon, right? Dun, dun, dun,
they
dun,
just
dun,
kept
crack,
going
dun,
right dun, around dun, the video. Yep.
It was fantastic.
It was, and it's funny because I watch a lot of Cubs games, and the Cubs are struggling offensively, much like the Giants did earlier in the year. They can't get guys in. You know, when they get them on, people are swinging this stuff out of the zone, and it made me stop and appreciate for a moment how good the Giants have been lately. Because we were not seeing this, especially on the road. Like, I was just looking at a stat here. In the first nine games, they were scoring 1.7 runs a game on the road. In their last eight road games, they're scoring 5.5 runs a game. 288 batting average, 314 with runners in scoring position, OPS of 813 as a club. You know, it's one of those stretches where we kind of got to appreciate it, because it's not going to always be there. They're going to hit. They're hitting better on the road than they do at home, and they're pitching better on the road than they do at home. It's really
That's
strange.
That's the odd one. The hitting, I could totally see. The pitching is what's definitely a little different.
I don't understand. And they're going to Philly, which is also a bandbox like Atlanta is. But I think the bats can handle it, you know?
Yeah, and we're going to see tonight. They already released the lineup. I don't have it in front of me, but they do start here in a few hours. And Jeff Smarja is going to be on the bump. And we'll see. Homer Happy Smarja in one of the best home run hitting parks in the league.
Oh, it's okay. He has a 15.84 ERA at Citizens Bank Park.
Thanks for looking that one up.
Yeah, no problem. It's only six innings, but...
Yeah. One starter, maybe two starts or something. But yeah. Holy crap, that's that's not good.
Yep.
Well, overall, anyway, the Giants are now four games over 500 at 19-15. Who would have thought that? Remember when they were like 6-10, 7-11? Just really, really good baseball. They're four games behind the Diamondbacks in third place, a half game behind Colorado. They're just on fire right now. They're only a half game out of the wild card, which I know it's too early to talk about that, but at least it gives you kind of the litmus test on, or a barometer of where they are compared to playoff potential teams. That's five series wins in a row. They've won four consecutive games, 7 out of 8, 11 out of 14. So, boom. This is what we needed. And now we'll get into this here in a minute. But the injuries have been mounting for really the entire National League West, to be honest. When you look at the entire NL West, it's pretty bad. But it certainly has hit the Giants and the Dodgers pretty hard. We know about Panic going on the DL, and Bum's been out, and he'll come back probably mid-June. But the most recent thing that happened, of course, is Johnny Cueto. And the fear was that he had a tear in his UCL, and he was going to have Tommy John surgery. So he went down to Atlanta and saw the specialist, and apparently it is not a tear. So this morning, a couple hours ago, they did report the information that it's diagnosed as a strain of the elbow, and he just needs rest. So it's going to be 6 to maybe 8 weeks that he's out. So obviously it's not great news, but so much better than him being out for the entire year. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, he's been so dominant, and elbow issues can be really, really tricky. And it doesn't mean, and in fact, I'll have the quote here from Bags. He tweeted out this morning, Johnny Cueto had two examinations and several other docs reviewed his MRI results before he made a determination on a course of treatment. Tommy John surgery is always an option if rehabbing doesn't work. So that little last bit kind of does raise the hackles a little bit, because that is a possibility. But we also have to understand that Johnny Cueto has had MRIs on that elbow in 2011, 2015, and 2017, and every single time rest has been recommended, and he's come back fine. So let's just assume, hope, that that's what's going to happen this time.
I don't know. I said it on Thursday, and I said I chalked him up to being out for the year. And I guess that's just kind of how my mind's playing it. If the Giants were struggling, I would look more like, oh, my God, when's Cueto going to come back and help save them? But I think the fact that they're winning makes it easier to just kind of put Cueto in the back of the mind and not really think about him till the All-Star break, because I think that's the earliest he'd really be coming back. Yeah, you know, and that last line, like you said, it kind of worries me that he'll do some rehabbing, and 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, they'll be like, oh, let's just have the Tommy John surgery. And then you've lost 2 months of time that you could have had on the back end, and, you know, it's basically screws everybody involved. So when it comes to Cueto, I'm happy to hear that, but I remain skeptical. I didn't like the way he bounced back from injury last year. And I'm not sure that the line of communication has always been wide open when it comes to Cueto's health and the organization. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll take some time to see if he actually responds to things and wants to get back on the field, or if he thinks he needs the surgery.
Yeah, we've seen that happen. I can't recall specific names, but there's always been pitchers and even players who have battled through elbow issues before succumbing to surgery. And you're right. In doing so, they've delayed that surgery 2, 3, whatever, how many months they tried to work through it with rest and rehab. So if that were to happen, you know, if he were to have Tommy John surgery right now, let's just say that, you know, the average recovery time is 12 to 15 months. So maybe he would be back by next July or August or something like that. However, if he put it off until July and then he had Tommy John surgery, you pretty much that's it. He's gone for 2 years.
Yeah, there's no 18, there's no 19, and then you got the last year of his contract in 20. So it's frustrating with how it's gone with Cueto, because he really in 2016 showed some flashes of brilliance. The Giants rode him down the stretch, and I really thought he was going to be a leader for a while. I mean, you can't really blame injury, but you know.
No, it's certainly crappy. Not his fault. And you're right, 2016 was incredible. He started the All-Star game that year, and he was on track to do so. I mean, I know he still had quite a few more starts to go through, but he was up there. I know Kershaw would probably be the starter anyway, because
Roberts not anymore. Manager.
Well, now he's injured, but it's only the 10-day DL, by the way. We don't know what's going to happen, although this could be one of those 10-day DL moves and then extended later.
They didn't backdate it. They could have backdated it 2 days so that he would be eligible to come off earlier, and they didn't, which I think is it points to Kershaw's going to be out for 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks.
Yeah, and this has happened before in his career. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that didn't seem to affect the Dodgers when that happened last year or the year before. But, hey, yay, Kershaw's hurt, I guess. I don't want to root for someone to be injured. I mean, look, I want the Giants to beat the Dodgers when they're both at full strength. You know, I don't want to see either team have an advantage because of injuries, but that's baseball. I mean, it's going to happen.
But the thing of it is the Giants have shown thus far, you know, you mentioned it, the whole NL West is full of injuries, and you just went through the injuries with Cueto, and we're going to go through everybody else, but the Giants are still 19-11 with that depth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dodgers apparently don't have the same kind, or they've just, well, they're falling apart. They've already used 37 players this season.
Oh, jeez.
Giants, well, that's the thing. The Giants have used 34.
Yeah.
So you think that by, you know, having to mix and match as much as they have, they wouldn't get it together. But, I mean, there's plenty of guys like Panic and Law and Gomez that aren't around now that might be around again later. Because Arizona's only used 30 players, and so is Colorado, and that explains the winning ways. You find a winning team, and it clicks. Injuries can kill anybody, and it's might be what happened to the Dodgers this year.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to see where they are right now. What are they? They're in fourth place behind the Giants by... They're 15-19, the reverse image of the Giants. So they're four games behind the Giants right now, and only 2.5 up on San Diego. And San Diego took 2 out of 3 from LA and Monterey, Mexico, and that was after the Dodgers had a combined no hitter in Game One. Which I know it's like, I'm not saying this because it's the Dodgers. I'm literally saying this as a baseball fan. I don't give a shit about combined no hitters. I just think they're dumb. You know, it's like. You've seen pitchers. There's always been reports. Who was it? Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I can't remember his name right now. Giants reliever who's no longer with us, who had however many, 40-something or 30-something consecutive batters he retired.
Petit?
A couple years ago. Petit, yeah, thank you. And over, several games. And, you know, it was, they were like, hey, look, he's retired. He's basically had 1.5 perfect games in a row.
Right.
But... It didn't make national news. It was just more like local news. So to me, that's the same. It's the equivalent of like, oh, three pitchers combined for a no-hitter. It's like, oh, yeah. Great.
Well, I was going to tune in. I noticed that it was going on. I saw that Walker Buehler, had it through 6. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'll tune in during the 7th. Got a little distracted. Looked back at my Twitter feed and saw that he was going to be pulled and a relief pitcher was going to come in. And I was like, well, now I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, like it just loses the allure of it.
It does. I would have tuned in if it was this young fireballer going for it, you know what I mean? Cool, it's in Mexico, it's, all sorts of little stuff that goes with it. But as soon as Roberts pulled him, it's like, I don't care anymore. I just don't. Yeah.
How many pitches was he at, by the way? Do you know?
I have no idea.
I was just curious.
It had to have been around 100 or something like that.
It had to have been. I mean, look, as a Dodger fan, I would understand... If he was like, 95, 100 pitches, and it's only the end of 6, there's no way he's making it through 3. So it's not like Roberts could extend him, right? I assume he wasn't pulled after 70 or something like that. So
he's through 93.
Okay, so 93. So maybe he had another inning left in him. He certainly didn't have 3. That would have pushed him to over 130, probably. That's just, you can't do that to a young arm, so... Hopefully Dodger fans aren't too pissed about that. But hey, your team got a combined no-hitter. Yay. Whatever. Move
yeah,
on.
But like 20, 25, 30 years ago, that guy's not getting pulled.
No, of course not. No way. No, previous generation, absolutely not. Now it's all about pitch count and preserving them. So I'm actually surprised we haven't seen more combined no-hitters. Because that was the first combined no-hitter in Dodgers history. They've had like 36 or something like that. And that's like their first one was a combined. So I would still expect to see that trend rise in the major leagues. But again, no-hitters are so few and far between. You can't really establish too many trends, I would say.
No, but the magic, it's like you said, the magic is all about one guy going for one thing that, you know, he has been out there for the entire game for. It's a much different experience.
Yeah. So Bumgarner was cited, and there's some video of him throwing on flat ground there in Atlanta. Looks trim, looks in shape. Throwing motion looks smooth. Just from the casual eye, it looks like he's definitely on track to coming back in mid-June. So that's good news. Mark Melancon has reported to be throwing the ball and is eligible, to come off the DL on May 25th, which apparently he circled and he says, I'm definitely coming back then. I have my doubts. I don't know about, how do you feel about Bum and Melancon? To me, they seem complete opposites. Like Bum, I have no question he'll be back. It was just a broken bone. He's going to be fine. It didn't affect his shoulder or anything else, unlike last year when he fell off a bike. And he still was superhuman enough to come back and throw like he did at the end of the season. But Mark Melancon, we keep beating him like a dead horse. But I just, it's that injury that you just go, whatever, dude. He's targeting May 25th. It's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, my biggest hope for Mark Melancon's injury recovery is that Hunter Strickland keeps converting saves. I mean, because I know fans are hearing that news, and after a game like yesterday where Hunter walked the Brian Wilson tightrope, I know fans are like, well, bring me back Melancon. But folks, it was no better under Melancon. It really wasn't. His first game with the team last year, he blew a save for Bumgarner.
On opening day,
right. So you know, I'm good with Strickland. I'm with you. When it comes to Melancon, I'm from Missouri. Just show me. I think Bum will be back at the end of the month, like he's supposed to be, and I think he's going to be stepping into a much better rotation than most people expected.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we don't have it in the notes here, but you know, Suarez is just, you know, just was fantastic the other day, and he had to work through some jams because of the errors. In fact, that's another thing that I didn't write down, but you know, they had like 7 errors over the weekend, and yet they swept the Braves. So I mean, that's hard to do when you make that many errors. That is a bit of a concern, to be honest, but hopefully it's just an outlier. But you know, Suarez did work through some of those errors, which is great to see. He only gave up one run. He's looking good. He looks like he has the stuff to me. And I think you're right. I know you were definitely up on him before I was, but he looks like he's going to be here to stay for the long term, because, you know, when Bum comes back, and if Cueto comes back, you have those two plus Samardzija, and then you got Stratton, Suarez, and Law, but, you know, Block. I meant Block. And, you know, one of those guys is probably not going to be in the mix, but right now I'd probably put my money on Suarez over Block, but we'll see. And Block hasn't been bad. I'm not suggesting that at all. It's just the stuff I've seen from Suarez, because Block is a contact pitcher. He's like your old Kirk Reeder type, you know? Unless he could develop into a Tom Glavin, which he was similar, not high strikeouts, but great movement. He's still a subject to getting crushed once in a while when he loses, you know, the borders of the strike zone, and he things, you know, delivers everything over the middle. Suarez has a stuff, and I think he has the longevity for this game. So, I mean, we'll see. It's just, you know, kind of a 20,000 foot view over a few starts, but yeah. I like his demeanor. I like his delivery. I like his stuff.
He seems like he's been there already. He's a guy who just give me the ball, I'll throw it. You know, I knew the weather down here on a Sunday afternoon wouldn't bother him, because he's a kid from South Florida. So pitching, it wasn't going to be like Timmy out there sweating through, you know, 6 jerseys. Suarez was fine going out there. Yeah. And like you said, he had to labor a bit after the Allen Hansen error and actually gave up an unearned run in that situation, but managed to pitch around it. And I love how he's not afraid to throw any pitch in any situation. Kid's three starts into his career, like, it wasn't like that back in the day. You stuck to your fastball and your curveball or wherever it was. Suarez is totally comfortable trying to nibble at the outside of the zone, drop that curveball in there when somebody's expecting a fastball. He looks like he's going to stay, and Block had a good start on Saturday. It's funny, though. Lucas Sims, relief pitcher of the Atlanta Braves, struck out more guys than the two starting pitchers combined.
Yeah, I think Block struck out two.
Yeah, and McCarthy maybe got two or three. And Block, he pitched well. It was soft contact all day, and Sims at six, I believe.
And there's like 14 ground balls and like four fly balls. I mean, that's what he does. He relies on the ground ball and soft contact.
And they got a win in a Holland game. And the only way you can string together a winning streak like this is to get wins in games started by, at the moment, Holland and Samardzija. So, like, tonight is another key game to keep a winning streak going.
Right. Now, that'll be interesting. Yeah. So, Mac Williamson, he's still on the 7-day concussion DL, right?
Yeah.
He's going to play some rehab games. So, you know a little bit more about this than I do. Can you explain?
Yeah, apparently, just because he's on the 7-day DL, he doesn't have to come off right away, even if he's cleared. So, in essence, it works the same as the 10-day DL, that he can go and do some rehab games. And my guess is there's like another 7-day lapse, so it'll be possibly this Saturday, which you mentioned, that if he does go and play a couple games, he could rejoin the club. But it opens the door for Hunter Pence to come back, because he's been doing his rehab stuff right now. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna need to make a decision with him soon, because you either have to transfer him to a longer disabled list or activate him after a certain point. So I think Pence is going to get activated, and Mac will go play some rehab games.
That'll be interesting. That's definitely not something that was on my radar, because they thought he was going to be activated in Atlanta.
Yeah, I was all over. Yeah.
And he hasn't been activated today. So, yeah, it does seem like it's lingering now. So, I don't know why he would need to play rehab games. He had a concussion. He's been cleared of concussion symptoms. So what does he need to rehab, right? It's kind of like just throw him back in there. We don't want to see him in AAA or AA hitting bombs and going, hey, he could be doing that here.
I think it's more a result of the logjam with Gorky and Blanco. I really do. And, you know, we'll talk about it and who's not. I mentioned him the other day. Blanco is not carrying his weight right now. So he might be the odd man out in the first round.
Let's talk about who's hot, who's not. So, who's not? Go ahead, take it away there. You got Allen Hansen and Hunley and others.
Oh, yeah, Allen Hansen. It's Allen Hansen. I mean, who the F understood? Allen Hansen. I mean, nobody saw this coming. This kid's got great raw talent. He hit .429 over the weekend. He had two hits in every single game, three doubles, a homer, three runs, and there was that one slide where he slid away from the Braves catcher and snuck his hand in the base. It was just baseball instinct, and he seems to have the baseball instincts. And I think that the Giants are okay for a little bit with Hansen as the everyday second baseman with Panic out.
He was a highly rated prospect coming up, and he hasn't, you know, done great things with Pittsburgh and the White Sox. So he clearly has the tools. It's just a matter of putting them together. And again, we might be seeing an aberration here. This is a very short sample size. But that said, boy, he's been a great kick in the pants.
Right.
You know, replacing Panic right now. We have not missed Panic at all.
No, it's funny. Well, defensively, maybe a little bit.
Maybe, but, he did have an error or two here so far. But that's
true. You know, with a guy like Hansen being on his third organization, he's been knocked around a little bit after being a high-rated prospect. You have to wonder if something, you know, started to kick in a little bit better this year, if there's some sort of maturity or instincts that take over a little bit, because he seems like the real deal. You can see where the raw talent that was scouted comes from.
Yeah. And Nick Hunley, what about him, man? Jeez.
I mean, backups. You talk about backups, people coming in. Nick Hunley, here's the thing. In every one of these five series that the Giants have won, Buster Posey has had a day off.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. Why do you do that? Because Nick Hunley, since that Anaheim series, he's been 13 of 27. That's a .481 batting average. A 1.480 OPS. That's like Ruthian. Four doubles, three home, Bonzian, Ruthian, you know, four doubles, three homers, seven runs. Mm-hmm. He's driven mm-hmm. an 11. And every time he hits the ball, it's just hard. I mean, he's not carrying them, but they don't miss a beat when he comes in either, when Posey takes a seat.
No, he's been incredible. You know, you said here, what, 13 for 27, 481 since the Angels series. And, you know, of the last seven games, he's, what, 7 for 11, couple of doubles, a home run, and seven RBI in those 11 at-bats, hitting .636. I mean, that's for over a four-game span. Just been so hot lately. Posey takes an off day, and it hasn't hurt the team.
Right. Oh, here, we'll bat him fourth too. I mean, what other team gets to do that?
I know. I mean, it's funny. You see some of the crazy tweets too from fans going, "Well, he's better than Buster Posey. Why isn't Hundley starting?" And it's like, are you being serious? Like, come on, man. Just like chill out now. But yeah, he's got three home runs on the season, 11 RBI. Longoria leads the team with 7-19. Yeah, he's not too far behind that, and he's in limited playing time. He's played 19 games. Longoria's got 32, so almost double the games. So if you double Hundley's numbers, he's kind of right up there with Longoria, and he's hitting .333 on the year now in 51 at bats. So,
but I don't think if he were an everyday starter, I don't think if he were starting every day though, he'd be putting up these numbers.
No, probably there's something, not.
Yeah, there's something in him we've talked about. He's smart. I believe he's going to be management one day. I think something with him just clicked in, and so he channels everything into those few opportunities he gets because he knows that's the best way to help the ball club. I mean, the guy's getting old. He's going to retire soon. He's been in the league 10, 11 years as a catcher, and it takes a toll on you. So you got to figure he's kind of just wants to get a ring more than anything right now, and he's willing to do what it takes.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Buster Posey, of course, is normal hotness. He's 8 for his last 16, raised his season average to .307. By the way, Alan Hansen in 20 at bats is hitting .321 on the season right now. So, again, not missing Panic's offense right now. And then Dyson, Watson, Guerin, Johnson, and Smith all have combined over the last week to go 13 and a third innings pitched without giving up a run. So it's fantastic. Some of the bullpen guys, again, Johnson is really impressing me. This guy that kind of came out of nowhere, and it's young, you know, it's early in the season, but he's been great. And then you mentioned here Brandon Crawford, right?
Yeah, he was really struggling, so much so that we just talked about it on the last show, and he's had four straight multi-hit games and 10 hits over his last four games, and I believe there's two home runs mixed in there. Mm-hmm. He had a bomb on Friday against Atlanta. And I found this interesting. This is the first time he's ever had 10 hits over four games in his career.
Oh, wow.
Which is really strange because the guy had seven hits in Miami one day.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He had that seven-hit day.
Right. So you're telling me in the three games before or the three games after, he didn't have three other hits?
Yeah,
right? Like, that's kind of crazy to me. Well, but he's just different. He's stroking the ball well.
Yeah, it's crazy. 10 hits in four games. He has 28 on the year. So he had 18 hits coming into that four-game stretch. I mean, 10 hits in four
That's
games.
It
took him more than a month to get, 18 hits. And now he's got 28. So fantastic. In fact, what was it? Last episode or the one before, he was hitting 190 something. And we were like, ugh. He's normally a 250, 260 hitter. It's like, okay, something, you know, he'll come around. He's not going to hit 200 for the year. Sure enough, he's right at 250 right now. So that just, it was like just this huge surge coming from him.
Everything was leveling out. Broken bat hits were falling. He was driving the ball. He was finding holes. It was not just luck or, you know, one stroke. He was doing it in all different ways.
And he's got three bombs now in the year, so. So he's doing just fine. Thank you, Mr. Crawford. In fact, he's got 10 RBI now, so not too bad. Okay, let's talk about who's not. So Kelby Tomlinson, specs. You know, we all love the guy, but he's, you know, a little bit of a slump right now. His average has dipped to .250. He's one for his last 11. Small sample size. Gregor Blanco, you wanted to talk about. He's three for his last 21. So him and Gorkys, of course, have been kind of switching off in that role, and Gorkys was hot. He had four hits the other night.
Right.
Blanco has not been so hot.
You know, I mean, you end up with a real right-handed heavy bench, but, I mean, Blanco could be the odd man out. And you mentioning Tomlinson there, he's hitting like 180 on the season or something like that now.
No, he's 250 on the season.
Okay, so I was looking at it. Oh, I was looking at another stretch. It's 180 over his last something or other.
He's 12 for 48 right now.
You got to think, if Hansen continues to play the way he does, Tomlinson will be playing for his job by the time Panic comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's interesting. If he keeps that slide going, to see where he's going to be. Yeah, Blanco's at 274 now. Gorkys is at 296. It's amazing because, you know, when you're this early in the season, we were just talking about Blanco being near 300 and Gorkys being down at 250 last
night. Right.
Just what, 4 days ago?
Yeah, and they went totally different directions.
Just boom, Gorkys is now hovering at 300 and Blanco's dropped 25 points or so.
He's the only one who didn't get a hit in the starting lineup on Saturday.
They were talking about that. He was like, they're like, all right, Blanco's up for the fourth time trying to join the hit parade, and he's out again. So that happens. You know, he did have a triple, I think, in the first game that knocked in a run.
Drove in a couple runs, yeah.
Yeah. He's got, he's only got four RBI on the year. Gorkys only has two RBIs on the year. That's crazy. Wow.
Wow.
Didn't know it was that low. Kelby has three. Huh. What do you know? Brandon Belt still doing well over the overall, hitting 296, I want to say. 298 on the year. But he is 5 for his last 22, so, you know, just not the best week for him. I'm sure he'll come back. And then Maranta and Strickland could not find the strike zone. Now, Maranta, I've not heard anything since he was pulled two games ago. I guess it was Saturday. I was watching the game live at that point. And he came in, you know, with a big lead and in the ninth inning. And he threw eight straight balls.
So
and they
bad.
Weren't even close. And, of course, the trainer came out with Bochy and others. And they were talking about some sort of back stiffness or something. And he was, you know, kind of making those faces. And they were looking at his back. So he got pulled. And they ended up getting a double play and got out of the inning without any runs and closed the game out. So it wasn't an issue. But he lost the strike zone, and what's really interesting to me is when they flashed his stats. In fact, I'm going to bring him up right now. When they flashed his stats when he came in, because I've been really high on Maranta so far this year, I was blown away by the walks. He'd given up 11 walks so far. Now it's at 13. 13 walks in 15 and two-thirds innings. We're talking almost a walk an inning right now. And then you add the eight hits on there, and so his whip is at 1.34, which is, you know, average for major leaguers. But eight hits, but 13 walks. That's unusual to give up more walks than hits. So he definitely, I mean, his ERA is still fine at 1.72, but he needs to definitely work on that. So he lost that control.
Opponents are hitting 151 against him too. He's still on the roster active because I just saw the, you know, the sheet, the lineup sheet for today's game, and he is listed in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. It says in the notes that he's day to day, but I feel like Dyson over the last couple weeks, like Maranta looked great early because he throws smoke, but I think Dyson kind of passed him back up after a rocky start the last few appearances, and I think he's kind of passed him, and I think Maranta might become dispensable down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I still like the guy. If he could work on his walk total, I mean, he struck out 14 in those 15 and two-thirds. Like you said, 151 batting average against, only eight hits in 15. I mean, that's only a half a hit an inning, or a hit every two innings. That's all great stuff, man. It's literally just his walks that have been the glaring thing. Dyson had a couple of rough patches at the beginning of the season. He's been solid lately. Still has an ERA of 3. He's got 15 innings as well, close to Maranta. He's only struck out 6 in those 15 innings. And, you know, he's a hurler, a fastballer. So that's a little surprising. His strikeout totals are usually a little bit up. But he's only walked 4. So,
right.
You know, his whip is only 1.07, which is much lower than Maranta's. So, yeah, I mean, Dyson's been great lately, along with the previously mentioned, you know, Guerin and other not Strickland, but Johnson, Smith, and Watson. So, core of the bullpen's been pretty solid lately. No complaints here.
So are you worried about, you put Strickland on the who's not. Are you worried about him because he couldn't find the zone yesterday?
No, I'm not. You know what? I meant to do this before today. I want to look at his game logs, and this is just my gut feeling, and I could totally be wrong right now because, you know, he gave up a couple runs yesterday, so now his ERA is at 2.87, but it was like 1.8 or 1.9 coming into yesterday because, again, he only has 15 and two-thirds innings pitched. However, I feel like whenever he comes into high-leverage situations lately, even though he was blown two saves and they won those games, he gave up two runs yesterday, but he still got the save because it was a three-run lead. I feel like every time he's coming into these high-leverage situations, he's just not performing. So I would like to look up the splits. When he's come in for those, you know, work days, or they've been losing, you know, and he just comes in to get the work in, he seems to shut everything down, no problem. But when he has the game on the line or a save situation or a tie game, he seems to not be performing as well. So I need to look at those splits, but that's just my gut feeling. I mean, am I wrong about that? Or
I think it kind of just looks that way. It really reminds me of the Brian Wilson experience. There's sometimes going to be traffic, but the guy kind of knows how to pitch around it now. I mean, he's got eight saves, and I'm looking at the matrix. He's coming to one game when they've been losing by four or more. He's coming to two games where they're winning by four or more. And then every other game has been a tie game or a save situation.
Okay. So it's not, it's not a lot to draw off of.
No, and some of the blown, you know, games, like the one against San Diego was a tie game. You know, it wasn't a blown save opportunity. But
Arizona,
he seems,
Goldschmidt got him, you know.
Right.
Like, this happens, right?
So, I think everybody's...
The Padres, it was
Hosmer.
Hosmer that got him, yeah.
I think it's just preconceived notions about Strickland that are skewing everybody.
Yeah, man. Both saves were solid.
Yep. And I say this as a guy that questioned Strickland, especially last year after he hit Harper. I was all about get him off the team. This guy is an immature baby. And I think the opposite now. I've been beating the drum for him to just stay there, you know, since the season started. I think he's fine because he did learn how to pitch. I mean, he's given up. Those two home runs that we mentioned are the only two home runs he's given up this year. He tends to, though, it seems like he had two hits and a walk yesterday. He had one hit and one walk in a game against Seattle. He had two hits and one walk in that game against Arizona that actually it wasn't the Goldschmidt game. It was the other game against Arizona. And that's about it. Every other appearance, he's pretty much not hit base runners.
Yeah, no, his whip is under one right now. It's at 0.96. So he's not giving up a lot of runners. It just seems like they're kind of coming in bunches.
They
I
are.
Am in no way suggesting to replace him. I totally am full confidence behind Strickland right now. No issue. I was listening to Marty Lurie yesterday after the game, and you know they brought it up, and of course there were people calling in going, well, I think that Tony Watson should be the closer right now because da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, guys, just... You can't just look at the stats for a middle-inning reliever or a setup guy and just automatically assume they're going to be better than your current closer. Because, again, the closing role is so mentally challenging and fatiguing, and it's just a different ballgame. And so I'm certain if they put any other person in that role over, you know, 10 save opportunities, they'd be lucky to get 8 saves in those 10 opportunities. So, and again, the other two that he blew were not losses. They actually ended up winning that game. So Hunter Strickland, you know, other than the tie game that he lost, of course, has not lost a game for the Giants this year. He's just lost that
not
one.
Not on his own. Yeah, that's Watson. Guys like Watson, you talk about it. Their role in the bullpen is to get guys in the seventh and eighth inning.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy that he's not a situational lefty in the sense that he will start an inning clean and take the entire inning. But he is a situational lefty because Watson's going to be brought into a game with second and third and one out facing the two best left-handed hitters of the other team.
That's why
Strickland's
he's
not. Right. Strickland's not going to be brought into a game like that in that seventh inning. You have to have a guy to anchor down at the end of the bullpen with the way today's game goes to then build your other relievers off of that. And if you're constantly changing who that guy is at the back end of the bullpen, as we've seen in years past with Casilla and Romo passing it back and forth at times, it makes it more difficult for the other guys to establish their roles. So like Watson, like you're saying, needs to be left alone in his role as a middle reliever. Will Smith needs to be left alone in his role. You know, Pierce Johnson, as good as he's been, needs to be left alone. And Strickland gets that back end. And that's just the deal. That's part of the deal. That's how it goes. We'll talk about it when Strickland screws up. But, you know, say Dyson finally gives up another run to blow a game, we might not be talking about as in-depth about how bad he was that day as if Strickland had done it. Just happens to be that Strickland's the closer.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on that one. All right, so before we close up, I thought it was interesting to throw this in there. But Matt Harvey, the Dark Knight in New York, was DFA'd. And he has a long storied history. Of course, he had, you know, Tommy John surgery and he came back. He has not been the same pitcher as he was when he came up. And, you know, Mets fans are really pissed. But to me, the biggest problem with him has been his attitude, his partying, his lack of respect for the organization and the game. A lot of these little things that I think really signal maybe he's not as mature as he should be at his age. Regardless, the New York Mets have released him, and it is possible the Giants might kick the tires on him. Let's just, I mean, other teams, of course, will be in line to do the same thing. What do you say, yay or nay, on kicking the tires on Matt Harvey?
Personally, I'm a nay.
Yeah.
A lot of the national writer talk is that the Giants are the most likely fit because of Cueto and Bumgarner and the uncertainty with Smarsha. But that's just lazy reporting. They don't know anything about Suarez and Block and Stratton. And,
yeah.
You know, kind of how the Giants have been running this year. So I think that that's what makes it easy for guys like John Heyman and all them to point at. And Hank Shulman's fanning it a little bit. He's saying that it's possible, but I don't like it. The guy's he's a head case. You know,
yeah.
That used to be the term, and I got to use that term. He's a head case, and the Giants don't need distractions and problems right now. Mm-hmm. They need cohesive. They need every guy playing for the guy next to him, and Matt Harvey will be playing for himself. And I think that that's the main reason you don't go for somebody like him. I mean, good luck to him somewhere else. Hopefully it's Miami.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, he had phenomenal stuff and he had a great career potential, but he is a head case and there's been way too many reports on how he's handled himself, his personal life, his teammates, the locker room vibe, all of those things. I just feel like I know there are instances of guys who have been cancers that have gone to other teams and have fit in fine. And that's always a possibility because of the fresh start and getting basically smacked in the face by life and going, you need to wake up, right? So yeah. That is a slim possibility, I would say. But I wouldn't take that chance again with, you know, Cueto being out 6 to 8 weeks, Bumgarner coming back. You know, if both of those were gone for the entire year, you know, and Smarja continually gets blown up, maybe I would say take a chance. But I think with those two guys potentially coming back in the next 30 to 60 days, there's not a reason to bring a potential cancer into the clubhouse. And I just don't think it's going to be good for the Giants if they do sign him and he has some rehab starts and he comes up and, you know, he doesn't even have to pitch great or poorly. It's just what may happen in the clubhouse that I think is not good for this team. So, yeah, his ERA over the last 3 years is over 5. He has not shown any promise whatsoever or any talent whatsoever.
Giants,
I know everyone keeps pointing to Sam Dyson and going, well, you know, he's a reclamation project and look what they've done with him. And it's like, yeah, that's true, but they're two different people. And Sam Dyson didn't have all the baggage that Matt Harvey has. So I don't. That was more mechanics and other things going on. I think Matt Harvey is more of a, like you said, a head case. So I don't think it's a virus you want to bring into the clubhouse.
No, he's going to end up with some team like Oakland or, I don't know, maybe even the Dodgers as a last gasp or, you know, who the hell knows, Pittsburgh. He's going to end up with one of those middling teams who thinks they might have a shot. or he's just going to end up, you know, with like Cincinnati, who's 8-26. And that's the thing. The Giants are 19-15. It's not like they're 11-23 and they like, what the heck? Let's just see, you know, throw whatever at the wall and see what sticks. No, forget that. The Giants are in the thick of something right now. And I understand you want to get yourself better, but sometimes you can get better by adding. And so I don't think they'll do it either. The Giants
I don't think they will.
Character. Yeah, they're all character. Well, they try to be character. So,
yeah. Just an interesting idea, anyway, that I thought was worthy of talking about. So we'll see how that develops over the next few days to week. So coming up, the Giants start tonight in just a couple of hours in Philadelphia. They got 4 on the road in Philly and then 3 in Pittsburgh. So if we record next Monday, I guess they're going to be kind of wrapping up that Pittsburgh series. In fact,
they'll be at home against Cincinnati next Monday.
That's right.
Yeah, in Philly, I wanted to share this. Buster Posey has the highest batting average against Philly since 1913. He's hitting .392 against the Phillies.
Nice.
My favorite part about this is the second guy on that list is Wally Pipp. Hit
Wally Pipp, huh?
And for those out there who don't know, Wally Pipp was replaced by Lou Gehrig, and Lou never missed another day. So Wally, I love that. You know, I mean, when do you ever see Wally Pipp's name other than, you know, the whole Lou Gehrig thing? And the Giants, the Phillies, they're 16-10 again since 2014. Their third best win percentage against any team since 2014.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other two teams above that are Atlanta and Milwaukee, and we just saw what they did to Atlanta. So hopefully, I mean, three out of four is the hope for this week.
Yeah, I mean, 3 out of 4 is the hope. I'm fine with a split because of the way they started off the season or the road trip, right? So if they split, they're 5-2 on the road trip going into Pittsburgh. So that's fantastic. You know, again, we want them to be .500 by the time Bum comes back. Now we have Cueto out, so it's like, maybe we need to start looking at being at least 4 or 5 games above .500 when Bum comes back.
That's what I'm looking at. A little buffer.
And that's where they are right now. They're 4 games over .500. So now if they play .500 the rest of the way, they're going to be 4 or 5 above when he comes back. So that's great.
Well, you mentioned it in the notes and at the top that they're a half game out of the wild card right now. And I'm not even thinking about that. I'm not even thinking about .500.
Right now.
I'm thinking about the division. I'm thinking about what they can do to gain ground on Arizona right now, because the Giants, like, these are the streaks that they got to take advantage of, and I think that they're going to. Philly, like I said, they've got such a great history against. Buster's on a 22-game hitting streak against the Phillies.
Nice.
That's ridiculous, dating back to 2014.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and he's starting tonight, so.
Oh,
this is going to be fun, guys.
A reminder for you and all the fans out there, Thursday afternoon, or Thursday morning, I should say, Thursday morning's game is on Facebook Watch. It's not on any local station. There's no crooked type.
Yeah.
It's on Facebook Watch. I don't know how to access it. I don't work for Facebook. I live on a farm. I just, you know, wanted to remind everybody because I wrote it down so I don't forget. But the block, whoever matchup.
Is that a getaway game? Is that a morning game basically for
West Coast?
It is.
It's 105. It's 105 here. So it's 10 o'clock
in the
morning.
10 o'clock here, yeah. So I'll be at work. That's okay. Good. I'll just go on my wireless and just have a little window in my dual monitors at work. Go ahead and watch that game on Facebook Live. Well, great, man. Fantastic episode. Just fun stuff to talk about. I love to talk about the Giants when they're winning. We'll still talk about them when they've lost 7 in a row. That's what we do. Bring it to you guys. Gosh, you know what? I wanted to call something up right now. I wanted to say that we've had definitely some great feedback and comments lately on I'm trying to bring it up right here. While I do that, why don't you just remember, you can follow us individually at ChadK21 and at Two Out Hits for Eric.
Your San Francisco Giants.
And now you hear my podcast, our podcast going through.
Yeah, that just started.
You can follow Eric at Two Out Hits. So that's with the number 2, or collectively at Torture Cast. You can like us on Facebook. And boy, our podcast is everywhere. So if you're listening to us now, we don't need to tell you where to find it. But
Alexa, play the Torture Cast podcast.
Sorry, I can't find
it. Son of a bitch! It worked earlier. This is the second time I've tried to do that while we're recording.
I love it. Oh, my God.
It's true, though, folks. If you say that to your Alexa, you can get the Torture Cast through iHeartRadio.
You got cock block there.
Oh, it's the second time.
I know, because I've done it too. I've done it where it worked, and then I've done it where it hasn't worked. So I don't know why it seems to be hit or miss. But
literally, the only two times it hasn't worked are the two times I've tried to do it on air. So I'm just going to record that separately. Well, shut up, Alexa.
Shut up, Alexa.
Sorry, folks.
No, you can find us on iTunes, of course, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Podbean, obviously through Alexa, iHeartRadio, all that stuff, and even YouTube. It copies over onto YouTube. In fact, we've gotten a couple of comments on our last episode from Santa Ana Canyon. Love your show. Very informative. From Tim Honeycutt, another great podcast, guys. Thanks again. We've received, you know, a couple dozen of these comments over the last few weeks. So I don't know. Eric and I are happy that at least people are listening and they're enjoying the content. So
I love
thank
the
you
YouTube
for those comments.
Yeah, I love it too, because I even shared it the other day and said all you got to do is click play. And a buddy of mine who runs another podcast, you know, he was like, "Oh, that's really good that you guys have it integrated now, because it makes it so easy. All you got to do is just pop it open and it's open in the background."
Just so many platforms that you guys can consume us on. So thanks for continuing to listen and supporting the show with your likes and comments and everything else, because we are not paid to do this at all. We have not sought sponsors. We don't get any money whatsoever. We're supporting this out of our pockets right now. So maybe one day we'll look for financial support, but at this point we're doing it out of our passion for the Giants and our love for the Giants. And it's been this is our 8th season on the podcast, which is pretty incredible. You know, 142 episodes and countless interviews and bonus episodes after games, which unfortunately we can't do anymore because everyone's moved away. But anyway, I just want to say personally thank you to everyone out there for supporting the show. We really do appreciate that. So that'll be it for episode 142. We should be back next Monday for episode 143. Hopefully the Giants will continue this winning streak on the road trip and come back with a winning record as they face the Reds. But until then, for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you next time. Kaboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.